Good morning, everybody. Members of Parliament and the officials from Pretoria, led by the acting DG Alf, Mr. Alf. I see you are so many today because we are not in Parliament. when we called you to Parliament, we just sent you to three people. But then we are in Pretoria, so many. Maybe you tell us everything that you requested.
So, yes, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we were just wondering that these are many issues to cover in one session. And we were asking perhaps if you could, if I could make a proposal. We've got our members from Biodiversity and Conservation here. We're wondering if we could do those items first, because they have to be before Nairobi, a meeting in Nairobi, if possible. That's one proposal. The second proposal is that we do have a session with you on the 1st of September on climate change, a detailed session, and we were wondering whether or not we could cover the climate change on the 1st of September.
Yeah.
And the third request is that perhaps if there is not enough time, perhaps you could, if the committee could
Okay, let me get guidance from the honourable member first. Are we agree with the proposal?
Yes. We don't have a problem with that.
Okay, the first proposal agreed to. The second one is that let's defer the climate change presentation to the 2nd of September. Mm-hmm. Agreed to?
Yes.
Thanks. And in fact, how many presentations are we to receive today? If I can get
there's many presentations, Honourable Chairperson. we're just wondering whether or not we could prioritize some of but in that respect, we're in your hands in terms of which priorities you want to cover.
Can we, honourable members, can we quickly look at this agenda and check as to which ones do we think we can deal with, and then we can prepare others for later
things. Rhino coaching is one of those suggestions that we need to take.
Rhino coaching.
Yes. And Chair, the National Planning Commission?
Yes.
And then Chair, over the page, also under number 4, there's the implementation of the Mineral and Petroleum Resource Development Plan and the NEMA Act. That's a massive issue at the moment. Okay.
Yes.
Just take that.
In fact, that's I think in the interest of time, let's see.
Okay.
Mr. Alf, Action DG.
Yes,
Honourable Chairperson. Yes, we think we can deal with item 1, relationship between the National Planning Commission and the Department, and also the rhino poaching and exportation of limestones and cutting of elephants.
Yes.
And the implementation of the waste management legislation.
Yes.
And lastly, the establishment of presentation of dedicated environmental corps in that order.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. Could we also propose perhaps the mining one?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Do you want me to introduce the team here?
Our team is too big. Just introduce those who are going to present.
Just introduce those that are going to present.
Yes.
Thanks, Chairperson. Perhaps if we could deal with the biodiversity stuff. I'm going to hand over to Shawnee, who is the Chief Director of Biodiversity, to take you through the biodiversity presentation. I've asked our presenters to limit themselves to 10 minutes maximum.
Which one is that?
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you very much. thanks. I will be
which
talking to the first issues, focusing on the.
Excuse me, Sean.
Yeah.
Before
which
you
one?
Continue, let
on the
find
pages,
out
yeah.
Which page are you.
The civilization that we cover lion bones and kind of elephants, alien invasive species, and the thing of support on the genetically modified organisms as one civilization. And then immediately after that, our colleague came from Sandbach to a presentation for lion bones. So those are the two presentations that we focus on. So we start with the first one that covers the rest, except rhino poaching. And then the second one will cover rhino poaching.
Thanks, you can continue.
Okay. I'll be operating flights there. I hope you won't be going through the same for the other. So it will be covering all the, the four aspects, except rhino poaching, as I indicated. Got my colleague here, Ken Max, Fia Carroll, and the total aspects is efficient on any invasive species and lion issues. One thing on my right, and we'll be talking to GMO issues and technical aspects associated with that when we take questions. Okay, so I'll be covering those four issues, which I'm not going to repeat, but it's the issues that you requested us to give a briefing on. The first issue was the issue of lion bones. We did look at it, but I think it's important for us to indicate to the committee here that the issue of lion exports is valid through province. For this concurrent functions, and they take care of this issue. However, the legislative framework is provided for at the national level. Indicated the lion is considered as a vulnerable species in terms of NEPA, the National Environmental Management Act. So a permit is required to carry out activities associated with that. So if the activity that is being applied for is considered as a restricted activity, a permit is required for such, and in this case, the export is issues of exportation are regarded as part of restricted activity. Therefore, a permit is required, of which provinces are in charge of that, and they administer that effectively, that's what we believe. Also, the figures, as indicated there, is that Northwest and 50 are the ones that are currently active. This is a new phenomenon. Which we're trying to grapple with is just to find out as to what triggers it and what are the demands and why why do we have these new demands for lion bones at the moment. Northwestern Free States have issued those permits 2 and 6 respectively in 2008 and in 2009, 4 and 9 respectively. That is all about lion bones. So most of these bones come from captive breeding facilities. But we are hopeful that content that the current legislative framework and institutional arrangement that we have is sufficient enough to deal with the current challenges, unless if the phenomenon takes another direction. In terms of the culling of elephants, we know that this is a contentious issue. Normally people would ask whether this is ever going to be considered or not. One cannot say ultimately no, as much as we are saying that it's not on top of the agenda anymore. There hasn't been any suggestions for culling of elephants at the moment. But I think the Commission would have to know that if we come to that decision, it should be informed by management plan. Because every aspect associated with the management of elephants, culling included, and many other aspects associated with the management of elephants, should be done within the framework of the management plan. Management plans that provide for a number of other options that would have to be looked at. So culling becomes the last aspect to look at. There's an issue of contraceptives, there's an issue of translocation, there are so many other things to look at before one can consider culling. So we have looked at so many few, not that many, but management plans that were submitted to us. There was none that suggested culling as a management option up to this far. And if such comes, we'll look at it and look at the context that informs that. And decisions can then be made. But I think I would emphasize the first point that I made, to say this becomes one of those last resorts that one will consider moving forward. But at the moment, we haven't been for such for quite a long time. This issue is complex, very critical to consider, especially because it's one of the key drivers of biodiversity law. So we're doing the best that we can finalize the process, and we're hopeful that towards the end of this financial year, we should be in a position to publish the final regulations, and then we can then move into publishing for implementation soon. So the current regulations or the draft that we have covers a number of issues, including the national strategy for AIS and also the risk assessment systems that need to be put in place. And it's done within the framework of the National Environmental Management Biodiversity Act, which covers a number of aspects, including prevention, control, and other things. There are a lot of institutions that are involved, staff in particular, and other not only as issuing authorities, but they also have some critical role to play. I think that's what makes it a bit complex, because there are certain expectations from other departments, especially the Department of Agriculture, in terms of the implementation of alien and listed invasive species regulation. There are a number of aspects that we have covered through this regulation. As I indicated, risk assessment systems, the issue of categorization of this species, when is the village required, all those things are indicated within those categorizations. There are other species that we will never allow for any damage to be issued, so the normal. And we also deal with the introduction of those species into the Republic, and the management within the Republic and the control and eradication is indicated earlier on. So there is a process, and we... to some of the aspects that we need to consider at the moment. The preliminary, not detailed costing per se, but projections that we have in terms of the cost that will be required for the effective implementation of these regulations indicate that a lot of money will be needed for that. Not only for eradication, but also the compliance enforcement aspects associated with these regulations. Committee would know that there are millions and millions of rands that are invested in the national program, what we call it, the Working for Water program to eradicate what we already have in the past. So there's still a lot of money that is required for enforcement and compliance. So the issue of capacity associated with that as well is an issue. Especially when it comes to the introduction to the public and the movement of this species. There are other aspects, legislative aspects, that still need to be dealt with, and we have requested for the legal opinion on some aspects, some of which may necessitate an amendment to NEMBER to make sure that the implementation of these regulations effective. So we are looking at that at the moment as well. So
yeah,
in terms of the...
If we can avoid using abbreviation. Say things in full.
Come again?
If you can try to avoid abbreviation.
Okay. I will do that, Chairperson.
Say amendment to NEMBER, say it in full. Even if we know what
okay, the National Environmental Management Biodiversity Act.
Yes.
So there may be implications to the National Environmental Management Biodiversity Act. Just to make sure that we have effective regulations that are implementable and that could be easily implemented by all the parties that are involved in the process. In terms of the genetically modified organisms, the request was for us to provide the status report on this particular aspect. The committee notes that the South Africa is the eighth largest producer of genetically modified organisms and what we call biotechnology crops or biotech crops. We are the only African country with commercialized genetically modified organism crops. Other countries are still doing their field trials, but South Africa has moved on to the commercial stage. And they are 2.1 estimates at the moment that 2.1 million hectares of genetically modified grains, cotton and soya, were planted in the previous season in 2009. So we are currently the developer, importer, and exporter of these crops. So we are a global player in that. So those are some of the countries that are also regarded as global players on genetically modified organisms, especially North America and South America. So as I indicated earlier on, the East Atlantic, the other countries that are involved in that, Argentina included, and others. The legislative framework in South Africa is informed mainly, there are others, but mainly by the Genetically Modified Organisms Act, which is administered through the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and it provides for the regulatory council and also the Scientific Advisory Committee. And these institutions meet on a regular basis, I think six times a year, to look at the applications when they come in to be reviewed. And the advisory committee will then advise the executive council, which then would inform the registrar in taking a decision on whether to provide or to approve or to deny a permit for the application that is coming in. So, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries is the competent authority in this regard. We also have the National Environmental Management Act that also provides for a framework to manage genetically modified organisms, especially as this relates to the impact to the environment. The National Environmental Management Biodiversity Act does the same as well, but it also provides for the monitoring of commercial releases and also the environmental impact assessment. For specific genetically modified organisms that are considered to be a threat to biodiversity. So, in terms of the legislative framework, I think South Africa does have adequate tools to be able to manage the potential impact of genetically modified organisms. When it comes to decision making, we find ourselves countries to have modern decision making process. In terms of deal with the biosafety and genetically modified organisms. As I indicated, that the Executive Council, the Advisory Committee, and the process that is followed with the involvement of a number of partners, at least six of them, the Department of Agriculture, looking at agricultural related issues, the Department of Environmental Affairs, looking at the environmental issues, Department of Health, looking at the implications for such to health and human well-being, and the Department of Labor and Trade and Industry, and Scientific Advisory bodies also supporting the process. So the decision-making process, I think, is rigorous. When a decision is taken to say an application is approved, all these issues are, many issues are taken into consideration in that regard. So institutionally and legislatively, I think we are at a position where we can say we should be comfortable with the process. Of course, we need to always improve. vaccine, not only food and feed, and not only maize and soybeans, but also it goes beyond that to look at issues like vaccine. They are also continued in terms of facilities and that would have to be looking at maize, sweet potato, and potato that also go through the approval process. Basically, what the Department of Environmental Affairs is responsible for is to manage the risks associated with the potential impact of genetically modified organisms as they pertain to the environment and biodiversity, whether it impacts the species or ecosystems. And then the other part is also look at the interest, look at the health interest in this part. I think briefly, those are the updates associated with the four issues at hand. I'll hand over to Ken Metz to deal with the last part, the presentation on rhino poaching, provide updates and stays at the moment, and also the processes at hand and our responses to this particular issue. The department has requested SAMHSA to play a coordinating role, involving other departments, provincial authorities, police, the security agencies, and many other departments that are affected to make sure that we have an effective response to this particular issue. To take us through the presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Chairman, Honourable Members, ladies and gentlemen. What I'd like to do is just give you a brief status on the current rhino population. That's the first slide you see. And then I will just take you through the current poaching problem that we have, the status, and then just briefly look at the strategy that we're busy implementing now to combat it as a group. First of all, you'll see that the red line there indicates the white rhino populations in the country over the last couple of years. They're indicating a steady growth of about 5-6%, which is very healthy. We have an estimate of around 20-odd thousand white rhino in the country, both on provincial, national, parks land, and private land. The black rhino population is around 1,600 plus, currently also in the country. So generally speaking, the populations are healthy, growing healthily, not only population-wise, but distribution of the various transportation operations going on around the country. So not only colonizing historically, areas historically favoring rhino, but also in some areas that it's still to be determined. Just a slide depicting the current poaching problem in the country. I've taken the last 10 years to give you an indication of the sudden spike in rhino poaching from about late 2007, early 2008. The indication there is quite dramatic, indicating obviously a high sophistication, well-organized poaching syndicates, or in fact crime syndicates in operation. You'll see there that Sam Parks, in particular Kruger National Park, has had 79 poaching incidents this year. Gauteng Province 15, Limpopo 27, Mpumalanga 10, Northwest 35, and the next highest, KZN 14. That just depicts around the country what is happening. So what is interesting is the value of this particular poaching activity. I'd like to just give you those figures. I'm just looking at the current situation of animals in South Africa at 186 this particular year since January translates to about 65.1 million. And if we look at the current trends, for the rest of the year up until December, at the current rate of poaching, we're likely to lose another 104 animals, which would give us a total of around 290-300-odd animals, relating to about 101 million. So it's really frightening figures that we're looking at the moment. Around the country, just to give you an idea of what's happening, you'll see the indications in red, with square blocks, are the number of rhino killed in each province. It would be interesting to note that a lot of the poaching has taken place over the years, certainly in Kruger National Park in KZN. We've shared a history of poaching going back 20, 30 years. It's only recently in the last 2 to 3 years that we've experienced poaching in other provinces such as Free State, Northwest, Limpopo, and to a lesser degree in Mpumalanga. And of course, this year and towards the end of last year, Eastern Cape and Northern Cape experiencing poaching for the first time. In blue, the round circles in blue are just an indication of the arrest that we've made this year in relation to the number of rhino, 186 killed during the year, and we've arrested 62 people in various operations around the country, but more particularly in Kruger National Park. This is a slide depicting the current situation in Kruger National Park. We're sitting with a tremendous spike once again, which is really comparative to that shown for the rest of the country, starting late 2007 and going into 2008, where we've experienced 36 in 2008, 50 in 2009, and a really tremendous leap up to 79 so far this year. That is current up until this very minute, which translates to around 27.6 million. And if we look at the current trend of poaching in Kruger, mainly orchestrated from the Mozambican side, will be in the region of another 45 animals this year, translating to 124 by the end of the year, around 43 million. The bottom half of the slide just depicts the sections, the 22 sections in the Kruger that are showing rhino poaching. And you'll see there that the 12 of the 22 sections are now currently experiencing rhino poaching. This slide just gives you an idea of where the poaching activity is currently taking place. You'll see the majority of the current poaching is taking place along the eastern boundary with Mozambique, with the central districts around Mwanetsi and the Olifants River being hard hit at the moment and currently experiencing a lot of the poaching. There has also been some poaching activity in the southwestern corner of Pretoria, Skopenstal, Select, but the majority at the moment is certainly along the eastern boundary. Yeah, this is the poaching activity this year from January to now, giving you an idea of what is happening per day. Now, what is rather alarming is if you look at the South African figures on the top, we lost over one animal a day. And currently in August, we're surpassing that with a tremendous spike of rhino poaching taking place also in some of the provinces. The Kruger showing a very similar trend, although the poaching seems to have peaked in June, but certainly August showing a slightly higher figure than July as we speak. But the trend is very much the same, that is pretty much of an upswing, but that there has been a spike. We're not too sure what to attribute that to just yet. We're still investigating that. Just to give you an idea of how we're going to tackle the problem or how we intend tackling the problem, we've identified five different levels in relation to the criminal activity, the organized crime activity that's going on. Your level one at the bottom of the pyramid is in the protected area, private land, where the poaching is currently taking place. area surrounding those particular protected areas or private land from whence poaching groups and poaching activity tends to originate from. And then you have level three, which is the national level, where the syndicate, South African-based syndicate members are operating generally from your main centres in Gauteng and along the coast. And level four being your international but regional level, looking at Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Swaziland, Namibia and so on. And then, of course, the end user, the end of the road being the consumer countries in the Far East. What we have, you know, definitely realized that in order for us to tackle this particular problem, we have to do it at all five levels simultaneously if we can make any impact at all. And hence the initiative that we, or strategy that we implementing currently, looks at those five levels and addressing or at least attempting to operate and to function at all of those five levels. The arrest currently to date at those different levels, you will see that in level one, where the poaching activity takes place, is 43, level two in the immediate surrounds adjacent to those areas, 13, and then in the national level around Gauteng, we've arrested six. Now, one can immediately see that level four and level five are relatively untouched. Well, as we implement our strategy, we're hoping to make some inroads into those other levels and, of course, increase the number of arrests within the lower levels. What is important for us, one thing we've identified at level one where the incident takes place, is almost a continuum moving from a, let's call it a rather simple investigations process where you have an illegal hunting activity taking place. But this particular activity then moves through this continuum relatively rapidly towards, you know, the different lower levels of the crime syndicates where you have illegal trading, illegal dealing, and then it moves on to even more complex sort of activities relating, you know, to the different levels of corruption and racketeering, which require rather complex investigations. So as it moves along from level one to level five, so your investigation's complexity really increases. So this must also be taken into consideration with your strategy. How are we going to tackle it? Well, at a provincial level, looking at level one and two, we're saying that the important stakeholders that need to be involved here are certainly the prosecuting authority, the South African Police Services, and the Environmental Management Inspectorate under the department. They have to work very closely at those levels. In other words, where the animals are being poached, from that level at least into the surrounding and adjacent areas, and they need to be plugged in or communicating or working closely with private landowners, the various private security companies, our parks, national parks, provincial parks, and so on. This alone obviously won't do it, so we need to also look at a national level where the more complex investigations need to take place, where the upper echelons of the syndicates are operating in the country and offshore. But we still have the same tripartite where we have the prosecuting authority, the organized crime unit, the Hawks, as well as the Environmental Management Inspectorate, all playing a vital role and working together in this particular initiative, along with the likes of the Revenue Services and Interpol and their various support services like asset forfeiture and the specialized support in from the police, forensics, ballistics, dog unit, air wing, and so on. So ultimately, the whole initiative that we're embarking on really involves all the in this particular model, forming this particular initiative in the middle, looking at it with the specialized units of the police, the prosecuting authority, as well as the environmental management inspectorate, with all their different support functions, operating from a national point of view right through into the province to the local level. Looking at the level four in the regional context, the international context, what we are looking at is developing a very similar model or structure within the surrounding neighboring countries, where we can develop a very similar structure within the countries that would support us via Interpol. The objectives of our strategy, really, we need to implement an immediate action plan. We have that, and we have a strategy. We need to secure the shared commitments from all stakeholders, including government, private, and our international stakeholders. We need to support the national coordination structure, and I think this is vital, and we need to develop an integrated national information management system to assist the investigation process. Also, continue to investigate proactive security measures at all levels, be it in the country and offshore. Some of the principal statements, I'll just go through them very quickly. But really, this policy or strategy is focused on the safety and security of Rhino, and at the level that it's been set, can be used to counter all organized environmental crime. I'm talking now perhaps abalone, cycads, and other species that may come up or existing on the radar screen. However, it's primarily focused on rhino poaching to get started. We accept there's a marked escalation. We need resourcing of the particular initiative that we have in mind, and very important, the political will. We accept that the positive interactions and relationships with all stakeholders is vital. We need an investigation unit, a national, coordinated, and joint unit made up of all the vital components, as described earlier. We need an information management system. All the intelligence and information can be centralized to guide and to strengthen investigation and prosecutions. And then, of course, very importantly, I think at every level, whether it's at the local level, in the park or the private park, right up to the highly complex investigations or courtrooms, we need highly motivated, well-trained, resourced and equipped personnel. We also accept that our research data is currently not adequate. We need to do a lot more research work, especially on tactics, on investigation methods, as well as the offshore demand. We don't fully understand the demand that is driving this, and we need to get behind that so that we can strategize correctly. We accept lawful criminal investigation procedures. We recognize the need for continued research and development. Monitoring is an absolutely vital component where we can monitor and evaluate our progress. And we need to understand the end user demand. There's a number of high level actions that we need for each objective, but I'll just go through them very quickly. A lot of them are repeated within the different components, but political will, immediate action plan, shared commitment, proactive security measures, are highlighted within the first outcome of an immediate action plan. Community-based security, bringing the communities on board. Budget, absolutely crucial to have adequate funding. And of course, we need to monitor all the mechanisms that we put in place. Political commitment, once again, in the shared commitment, we need adequate budget, lobbying support and acceptance. We need stakeholder participation at every level after having identified the necessary role players and stakeholders adequately. In terms of the information management for good law enforcement, investigations and prosecution, we need the unit, we need a plan, we need the various MOUs, we need to be looking at best practices, minimum standards, we need specialized environmental courts which are on their way, and we need adequate human capital. The last one where we look at, where we have a management system for all intelligence and information, once again, a national database is absolutely critical, and a national permitting system to do with the site permits in the country, I think will be absolutely paramount. And then the last one, looking at the offshore demand, where we need a comparative technical study of everything that's going on around the world. We need to support the international initiatives. We need the regional initiatives. We need to support our biodiversity management plan. And we need to understand fully, obviously, the impacts of all these different agreements. And we need a lot more research and development into new investigation techniques. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Maybe some honourable members may have some questions.
Leave that one to me. Member, can I be guided by you? Are we taking questions and clarification before taking the next presentation?
I think so, Chair, because we've had quite a few presentations.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, DG.
Yes, Honourable Chairperson.
Yes, I think we'll go straight to questions and clarifications before taking the next presentation.
Okay, thank you.
Member, can I have indication as to in that Odama, Jane, Lovemore, Bude, and Kosan, in the box.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Also, thanking the presenter with more information that always we needed. So we applaud for that. My question here is that they alluded that before 2008, the poaching of rhino was under control. So I want to know what mechanism they were using. Why they don't try that mechanism that they were using before that kept this poaching of rhino to be under control? The second one, when I look this graph, it says the Kruger National Park is the one that is the highest. So I was just asking, what is the relationship of our department with that one of Mozambique? Because it's a cross boundary. So I want to know if maybe this, if it's not influenced by the cross border, what can it be? What is it that is making it so high, having people that side, and we are also having our people who are monitoring this side? I think, I want to ask another question, because I think the number that they were, that we have been given, it doesn't say more about it says more about the criminals, but it's less that we have done arresting those people who have committed those criminals offenses of poaching. I see there's a little bit low number that says we have arrested this. This is cases that is on record that we are busy with, especially when it says to me, maybe I'm wrong, it says to me this thing of saying the provinces are the one that is on hand by their own park there. Maybe it influences what is supposed to be happening. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Ms. Lovell.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just on the lion bones, I probably should know the answer to this question, but I don't. Why are lion bones a sought-after commodity? And then on the very interesting presentation on rhino poaching, the rhino poaching incidents on page 2, the numbers of rhino poaching incidents, does this include attempted rhino poaching incidents? Because there have been some incidents I'm aware of, for instance, in the Eastern Cape, Shamwari is one place where rhinos have been injured, the horn hasn't been taken, or rhinos have actually been killed, the horn hasn't been taken. Does this include that sort of incident? I'm also interested in, on that same slide on page 2, it indicates that 35 incidents took place in Northwest and there hasn't been a single arrest. And perhaps you could just comment on the possible reasons for that. On page 4, you have listed the rhino poaching arrests, and you indicated that at level 4 and level 5, there are zero. Is this... I noticed from one of your other slides that Interpol is involved. Is the possession of rhino horn actually a crime in the destination country? So is it being enforced, particularly in the Far East? And then, just very quickly, the environmental crime, I'm now on page 8 of the handout that we got. The Environmental Crime Investigation Unit and the National Crime Investigation and Information Management Mechanism, you were saying that we need these. What progress has been achieved in actually getting these in place? And are these SAPs, are you talking about SAPs formations or are you talking about environmental affairs formations? There's been a lot of talk in the media about cyanide injections into rhino horn. Is this something that is actually being considered? And then, Chair, my last few questions. I'm on page 9 now, policy outcome 1, implementing an immediate action plan. I think this ties up with what my colleague Jane had to say. The fact that the spike started in 2008, we're into the second year of the spike, and we're still talking about implementing an immediate action plan. I'm sure we have implemented quite a bit. And then lastly, Chair, I'm interested in why the need for political will is constantly noted. Mm. Is there not political will to address this problem? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. good morning to all of you there in Pretoria. My one is more a comment on the first presentation. On page 3 of the slides that were given, I note here that you know the presenter spoke about the management plan must comply with this. The management plan must have this. My question is, do you mean that you don't have the management plan? If we are still saying that it must comply with this, it must have this. Is there no management? Is there no plan in place? My second question is that you spoke about you know some of the species that licenses will not be awarded. Can you tell us which ones are those? On the rhino poaching, my question is, Chair, I would like to understand from the department, you know, what fines are given to these people? They are arrested, are they going to jail or are they fined? If they are fined, what kind of fines? Why is it seems as if it's easy to actually kill? People keep on coming back. Are the fines so you know flexible that people can pay them and then come back next month or next week to still continue to kill the rhinos? That's the question. The second one is that, what are those investigative complexities the speaker, you know, referred to investigative complexities. If you can please shed some light and help us to understand what are those complexities. You know, the third one is how successful is the National Wildlife Crime Reaction Initiative, or what are the success stories that you can tell us from that initiative? The fourth question for me is the principles, you know, on your principle statement. You know, maybe you should not, you don't need to develop, you know, the crime investigative unit. You need to establish it as soon as possible. You know, some things you don't, you know, don't develop. I think it's something that needs establishment as soon as possible. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Jefferson, for giving me an opportunity to ask and make few comments on the presentation made. Jefferson, one, I heard the three provinces that were awarded permits, 2008 and 2009, that is Northwest, Free State, and KwaZulu-Natal. I'm just a little bit concerned about other provinces. What is happening in other provinces? If there are only three provinces that are awarded permits, are these other provinces do as they wish, or is any responsibility offered by the department to make sure that even those other provinces getting permits for what? And also, Chairperson, this issue of exploitation of bones is happening in different provinces. But I want to know the law enforcement. How does the department enforce legislation in the provinces? Because we are talking as national department, but I want to know in the provinces, how do they enforce legislation in the provinces? On the issue of rhino poaching, Chairperson, in the second slide, there is a huge amount which is reflected there, which is 101.5 million. I just want to know, is this the value of the animals that were killed, or the commercial value of the smuggled horn? That's what I want to know, Chairperson. And Chairperson, also, I just want to know the engagement of stakeholders. As legislation proposed that it will include all the stakeholders, I want to know how far has the department gone in engaging those different stakeholders in various areas and various provinces to make sure that they are on board in this legislation. When they are drafting this legislation, they will engage stakeholders after. I just wanted clarity in that score, Chairperson. And Chairperson, lastly, I want to know more about the funding that will be required in order to implement this. I know in terms of operation, you must have funds, but at least the estimation and also the resources that will be committed in order to implement this legislation. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is, what happened to those criminals arrested, as you have said, that the Special Environmental Court are on their way? Are those people prosecuted? And the other question is whether the department has a program involving the communities on the dangers of poaching, and how many game reserves that were expected to submit their elephant management plans, and why only four have been able to submit? Thank you.
Thanks. I also want to add on the question which was asked by Comrade Manganya there. What is your relationship with Mozambican and Zimbabwean authorities? Is there any collaboration regarding the combating of this rhino poaching and any other criminal activity? Another question relates to the arrest. On the slide that was provided, it says in Free State there is no arrest. But I've seen on the newspaper, I think a week or so ago, that some criminals were caught with a helicopter somewhere in Free State doing this rhino poaching.
Mm.
But J.O. said there's no arrest in Free State. So what would you recommend on that? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm planning to ask my colleagues to respond to the questions. Perhaps, Shumi, if we can deal with the line voting questions first.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. I will try to respond not in any particular order to a number of questions. Ken will go into the details of the operations, especially to explain the modus operandi at the moment, which will provide, I think, the context in which we are operating. The lion bones issue, the question as to why are they now becoming a sought-after commodity? Just like with rhinos as well, we've been asking ourselves so many questions. That's why I think as part of the strategy was to also look at the receiving countries and also research that could also inform us on why are these commodities becoming sought after at the moment, and the spike at the moment is unusual and complaining. We have heard that the demand Vietnam and some other countries, they've gone up. We have a visit to Vietnam in November, specifically to understand certain other things, not only as it relates to lion bones, but specifically around rhino horn and ivory and many other environmental crimes that we are concerned about, where the East, especially Vietnam and other countries, are involved. We have raised this issue. It was discussed at the meeting that is held every now and then with countries involved, a number of countries, more than 100 of them, maybe 180 to 190, that are part of the what we call the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, CITES. So we raised this issue and it was discussed. And through CITES mechanisms, international trade in endangered species of wild fauna and flora, through these processes, we have come to an agreement that there should be a coordinated process that is supported at an international level, even co-sponsored and funded by international organizations to allow South Africa to work very closely with the receiving country, to be able to understand and also work and understand their legislative framework, their administrative system, and be able to assist and force cooperation in dealing with this particular issue. And we are hopeful that this is also going to assist in dealing with this problem. We have done a lot of things. I think there was a question on so many things we said here on what we need to do. A lot has been done. In 2009, they published a national moratorium on the sale of individual rhino horns and any derivative or product within South Africa. Was done in 2009 to ensure that monetary obtained won't end up in illegal trade. Whether this is a backlash of that position, half composition that we've taken, we are not sure. Secondly, we have also published the national norms and standards for the marking of rhino horn and hunting of white rhino for trophy hunting. Just to regulate the marking and the hunting of rhino, which also is another step. We have established a national multi-departmental biodiversity investigators forum, which brings together not only staff, but provincial investigators together to talk and share information and plan together and coordinate efforts, compliance and enforcement efforts around this particular issue. We will also participate in the international rhino enforcement task force coordinated at the level of the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora. We are part of that. Beyond that, we are also part of the Interpol. cross-border coordination. We have, as indicated as part of the presentation, established recently a directorate, we call it Biodiversity Enforcement Directorate, specifically to coordinate and investigate biodiversity-related crime on a national basis. It's something that we didn't have before. We have, this year, in March, published what we call National CITES Regulation, CITES being the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora. So the regulations for that effect were published in March this year. We are also a part of the, as I indicated, Interpol Wildlife Crime Meeting and Rhino Task Force, and Regional Rhino and Elephant Security Group, which involves various other countries, and Rhino Management Group, we are part of that. And all of this are done to strengthen our efforts. I think the question was, which I think when Ken explained the models of Rana, maybe the honorable members will understand the complexities that he was talking through, as to why with all this debate, we still have an increase in poaching. There was a question that talks about the engagement of stakeholders. In the publishing process, either it's for long-term standards or the publishing of the regulation, the stakeholders are involved. The National Environment Management Biodiversity Act allows for a period for inputs to be received from different stakeholders. A number of workshops are held, the task team, and also bilateral meetings, key stakeholders to make sure that stakeholders are involved in the development process. Beyond that, we have a cooperative mechanism, what we call the MINTEC, the ministers, the minister with MEC, meeting on a quarterly basis, the DG with heads of departments from provinces meeting on a regular basis, the technocrats meeting also on a quarterly basis within the working group meeting specifically to deal with this particular issue. So there is enough space for stakeholder engagement in beyond public institutions, civil society as well involved in making sure that whatever developed their partners. The reference made to that I indicated as part of the status associated with Lyon, my reference to Northwest and Free State, to those two permits and four permits issued, I was referring to permits that were issued by this province, not national government. Issuing permits to these provinces. Provinces do have power and they have authority to issue permits associated with the movement of lion bones. As per the regulations that we have that regulate threatened or protected species, they have this authority. And also as per the scientists being the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, wild fauna and flora, the regulations thereof allows for provinces to have certain power. So they can issue those permits and their considerations and many, many other issues that they have to look at. There was also a question that dealt with the management plans that we referred to, indicating that these management plans must comply with the following requirements and whatever. What we are saying is that the national norms and standards for the management of elephants in South Africa requires management authorities to prepare management plans. So what we are working on at the moment is to make sure that these management plans are in place. There are so many facilities at the moment that don't have those management plans, and we would want these management plans for the management of elephants to be in place. And there are requirements indicated as per the national norms and standards that we have developed that management authorities, especially provinces, should adhere, and also some parts should adhere. And those were the things that I was referring to say that they need to adhere to such. So the process is at the end. Not that there are no management plans for those facilities, they are there. But specifically for the management of elephants, one specific vaccine case for that, which we are currently working on most of them. The issue of funding, of course, yes, we agree with the committee. There is a need for a lot of funding, a lot of, especially for the implementation of this regulation and legislation. And when it comes to alien and invasive species, there's a lot of funding that is required for compliance and enforcement, as I indicated. All the imports coming to the country would have to be looked at, would have to be assessed, would have to be, there should be permits provided for that. So an assessment would have to be done. At border posts, there should be people in there. All exports associated with the commodity that we're talking about, including alcohol, or any other thing that may have to find its way out of the country, would then have to be subjected to scrutiny. Hence the need for personnel for such, the need for equipment. When Ken speaks to Linda, when he talks to the modus operandi, you would realize that specialized equipment is required. And that also requires money. A lot of people on the ground, we have written to all provinces, inviting them to identify people that will be seconded to the National Wildlife Crime Reaction Unit. And most of them have responded to that. And people that are going to be part of that unit will have to be somehow compensated differently, in the sense that they will not be working and following normal hours of work. They will need specialized equipment, they will need specialized training, and that requires money as well for compensation. So funding, of course, would be required. There's an indication of what is required for what. When it comes to alien and invasive species, of course, the transition plan, which is being developed, which is made the actual figure. I won't talk to the number of criminals arrested against the crimes committed. I think Ken will talk to that and also the prosecutions and the sentences associated with that. There was a question that dealt with the categorization of species, alien and invasive species. There are different categories that we are looking at. There's a category that we call prohibited alien species. That is where species within this category will not receive, applications that are affect for associated with this species will not be issued with any permit, because these species are not allowed to be introduced in the Republic. There are also what we call exempted alien species, species that may not require permit per se, except for imports into the Republic. There are also what we call the listed invasive species as a category. It's called sub-category. Listed invasive species would have to be managed through what we call compulsory control. Some of them would have to be controlled by species management programs. Some would have to be controlled by activity. Some would have to be controlled by area. Those that would need to be controlled by area. When we published for public comment, there were a lot of concerns about trout fishing and issues related to that, which prompted us to develop what we call fish maps. So certain areas will be permitted to have certain species of fish, but other areas may not be permitted to have such. But that is informed by environmental conditions and the potential for invasiveness. So all these categories are indicated, and there are lists of species that are involved, including your Lantana camara, some species of snails, some species of nematodes, some species of crayfish. It depends on what you are dealing with. Even some species of toads, frogs, some species of snails. So there are many things that are listed. It's not only plants, it's not only fish. We're dealing with a number of what we call categories of species that are listed, informed by science, of course. So environmental conditions are taken into consideration and the potential for investment. I mean, we have dealt with all of them. If there is still something left, after Ken's response, I think I will try
honourable members, just to go back, prior to 2008, when we were losing on average probably around about 12 animals a year, there certainly were indications that the sophistication and or the drivers behind the activity in terms of crime syndicates was not as evident. It was more of a loose arrangement. People felt that there was a demand for rhino horn somewhere. They would go out, at least if you had the experience, shoot the rhino, and then try and sell the horn, which has changed completely now. Is the animals being hunted at the moment are hunted on order. So it's a very slick, the conduit between the animal being killed and the rhino horn in readiness to leave the country is very slick, sometimes happening within hours, five to 12 hours, and the rhino horns may have already left the country. So it's a very slick, highly criminalized syndicate that are operating, and these syndicates are not only working with rhino horns, they involved in drugs, prostitution, human trafficking, abalone, and so on. So it's these vast criminal enterprises that have now identified rhino horn as a lucrative business, and obviously it has links with the international markets, illegal markets, and this is driving exactly what's driving the demand. Is questionable at the moment. We're still not particularly sure, but there have been indications that rhino horn has been used to cure cancer with some politicians in Vietnam, or a politician, and his cancer has gone into remission, and this could be driving the process. Or, in fact, people are stockpiling, knowing that it is a diminishing resource that is needed by millions upon millions of Far Eastern nationals that make use of it. Sand farms, the Kruger is the highest. We have, really at the moment, we have a common border with Mozambique. It's a fairly hostile boundary in that sense. In so far as it's not built up, it's remote. It's just a fence between ourselves, although fences have never kept anybody in or out. That we have close to 400 kilometers with Mozambique, and we have the communities in Mozambique, obviously unemployment is high, and the cost of the local communities, rural communities along these boundaries in Mozambique, very poor communities, exploiting or being exploited by the syndicates to obtain the rhino horn. So at this stage, also what we're finding around the country is that a lot of the poaching is actually being perpetrated by Mozambican nationals along the Kruger National border, as well as around the country. The poaching activity is highly mobile. Hence, a place like Eastern Cape that may not have inherent in the communities the experience and knowledge to hunt big game like rhino and elephants and so on is non-existent in the communities and therefore is imported. But the local communities, the local knowledge is then exploited by the syndicates. And hence, Northwest, we have had no arrest. The syndicates are highly mobile, so the poaching activity that is taking place in Northwest is likely to come from afar. Either from Mpumalanga or Limpopo, could even be orchestrated from Mozambique itself. But it's very difficult to get to grips with a highly mobile, highly sophisticated, organized syndicate that's operating very swiftly, and their conduits are very slick. The arrests for the year, 62 arrests around the country, of which 32 were in the Kruger. Comparatively speaking, in 2009, we had 26 arrests. So our arrest rate has improved. Our techniques are improving on a daily basis as we learn more about the syndicates. As we get more of the stakeholders on board and operating together, it's becoming a lot easier to change and adapt our tactics to suit those of the ever-changing tactics of the syndicates. The, in terms of the poaching activity itself, we are recording illegal hunting activities. So if a rhino is hunted and wounded, or a young calf that is dependent on its mother having been killed, and the calf is then subjected to predation or dies as a result, that we are attributing to the poaching activity. So it's all the illegal activities relating to rhino poaching and not just animals killed. So there will be a number of wounded animals that are still alive today that were interfered with in some way within the activity. There are certain enforcement actions. We are currently talking to the Vietnamese embassy and the ambassador, and in the hope of understanding a lot more of what's going on, certainly in Vietnam, and we will be engaging with the other Far Eastern countries that are housed within South Africa, the embassies, so that we can start to get a dialogue and also hope to send a team over to some of these countries and invite some of their law enforcement agencies to see our issues here so that we can get some communication and certainly cooperation between the countries, especially if we understand what's happening offshore and they understand what's happening here. The initiative at the moment is progressing reasonably well insofar as we have the NPA on board. They have designated a national prosecutor to deal with organized environmental crime. They've also designated prosecutors in each province. We are now currently engaged with the South African Police Services, the Hawks, who are now putting together a national task team to work closely with our task, our particular unit, as well as the NPA. So the different components, the important critical components of the NPA, the EMIs, Environmental Management Inspectorate under the department, as well as the SAP, is represented by the Hawks on board. Rhino poaching has also been designated a high priority crime now. That would be in alignment with crimes such as cash in transit or ATM bombings and so on. So it's receiving the highest status, and therefore the Hawks will be investigating and assisting with that process, and we certainly will be assisting the Hawks in their investigations as well. The cyanide or the poisoning issue, I believe, is a very controversial one, and you know, we certainly would, as a department, would not be supporting that. First, we don't understand fully the demand and where it's going. The repercussions of that particular initiative or media outburst in relation to the poisoning is coming back to roost, insofar as there has been a report of a Far Eastern national, I think in Thailand, dying, and therefore there's an investigation process on the road. So I really don't believe that it is one of those options that we could be looking at, certainly not supporting. And however, we need to understand more of the demand, the trade, so that we can perhaps look at other options to address the problem. In terms of the political will, I think it's essential we have political will. At the moment, we really do. The minister has a full support behind this particular initiative. And I think in terms of the development of it, the communication, as well as the funding that is imminent, I think we are on the right track. The political will is there, although it still remains an integral part of the strategy is to maintain that particular interest. The fines and sentences, at the moment, because we haven't really had a dedicated green court system, a lot of these court cases take 2 to 3 years to run its course. So hence we're sitting with some of the incidents that have occurred, certainly this year, that are still pending court and are likely to do so for some time to come. However, with the pending or imminent Green Courts, is the establishment of the Green Courts, and now having the designated prosecutors, this should definitely and will definitely promote and speed up this whole process of prosecuting these individuals. The complexity of the investigation, really, if you look at a racketeering investigation, requires tremendous amount of skill, knowledge, and intelligence, because what it does mean is that it could mean a number of poaching incidents taking place that are all linked to one highly complex investigation docket, which is really the perpetrators are a crime syndicate, and therefore a criminal enterprise at play that certainly try to remain anonymous and covert in all their activities and actions. Very difficult to actually get to grips. However, we're making really good progress in this regard, and the Hawks certainly, with their expertise and their commitment, I'm sure we will see some really strong inroads into this aspect of the investigations, which are critical at level 3 and level 4, and also assisting with level 5. The success of the particular initiative, I think we've mostly got most people on board now. As Shani mentioned earlier, we have commitments coming that are coming from the provinces, seconding individuals, investigators with the necessary expertise and knowledge into this initiative. We have the NPA on board. We have the SAPS, the Hawks in particular, on board, and everybody working together. We are also liaising and communicating in a number of forums taking place and are still planned to engage the private sector to get them on board. It's absolutely critical to have their support, and the various initiatives are underway. The value of animals versus horn, the current price, the values that you see, what we have done is just taken an average price or an average cost of a rhino today is 350,000 rand. It can vary depending on the animal, the size of its horn, if it's a bull or a cow, but anything from 600,000 rand down to 250,000 rand. So about 350,000 rand being an average, that is for the animal, and that's its trading value currently live. If you look at rhino horn, we cannot, because it's black market related, we cannot even attempt to look at that. But suffice it to say, we're looking at, in this country at the moment, per kilogram, the cost of rhino horn, anything from 20,000 rand to 100,000 rand per kilogram, and the average set of horns runs at about five kilograms. So that gives you an idea of the kind of money we're talking about when it's the rhino horn itself. Once it leaves offshore, it's anybody's guess, but it's likely to be well over 100,000 up to 250,000 rand a kilogram that is being sold. So we're up against a tremendous uphill battle when it comes to the value and what people are prepared to commit themselves to in terms of the poaching activity with those kind of rewards. It is absolutely astonishing to see that in Mozambique, some of the poachers that were probably getting 2,000 rand for a horn a couple of years ago are now getting up to 25,000 rand a kilogram, and they are based on our boundaries. So that gives you an idea, and making 100,000 rand with a set of horns. And that kind of sort of activity, they'll probably be willing to risk their lives or everything for that kind of money. So we're up against a very, very strong sort of component here. The funding question, I think Shani alluded to the funding. The department is making funds available for us for operational funding of this particular initiative. And that is seen mainly as a top-up, because we are all committed from our institutions
and all the logistical support and funding that comes with it. It was just a question of top-up in terms of travel, in terms of communications and equipment, and the possible incentive or remuneration incentive for certain individuals that would be doing a lot more than they would be doing with their respective institutions currently. The relationship with Mozambique, I think Shani alluded to that, and insofar as we are plugged into the various international groupings, including Interpol, we're working very closely with the Mozambican, even at the Greater Limpopo Frontier Park level, the Trans-Frontier mechanisms that have been set up. We are engaging with the Mozambicans and the Zimbabweans, certainly from a Kruger National Park perspective. The helicopter that arrest in the Free State, currently we cannot link that particular arrest to the Rhino poaching activity directly, and hence we are a little bit cautious until the investigation is completed. Once we have a better understanding of what actually transpired there, the helicopter incident where people were arrested had to do with particular drugs that were found on board the helicopter. It is a suspicious situation. However, we're reserving that until such time as we have more information. But certainly, if we find any linkage whatsoever, it will then be logged accordingly. I'm not sure if I've covered everything. If there's something else that I'm perhaps missing, I would gladly respond.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think time is not on our side. If there is anything that members would like to make some follow-up, let's really hear it then. Because it's now 11:15,
yeah.
And we're still having 3 or 4 presentations to take. That's with relationship with the national planning and
could I perhaps propose that we take the environmental quality and protection unit or presentations? I think the presentation on the dedicated environmental courts links nicely with the some of the issues that were not within the biodiversity. Then perhaps we could ask the chief director dealing with the mining issue to do a presentation after the dedicated course, and then not sure whether there would be sufficient time to do the waste management presentation. But I thought the dedicated courts and the mining presentation
I do agree with that proposal. Let's do that.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Chair. Can I send over to Joanne Yawich, the DDG for Environmental Policy and Protection?
Honourable members, morning, honourable chair. I'm going to just
morning, Joanne.
Morning. On the environmental courts, what we are going to do, this is just a state of where we are. A decision was taken and there has been engagement with the Department of Constitutional Development, and that is what the presentation will focus on. And then once we've done that, we'll deal with the issue of mining. I think this is a very important issue because in relation to the case that we are in relation to the implementation of the NEMA amendment that was passed in Parliament the year before that, and the issues of mining and the environment have been really upfront in the public eye, and it is, we felt it was quite
morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members.
Good morning.
And colleagues. There's a brief report in terms of the progress in regards to the establishment of the environmental courts. As members can recall, that in 2009, the minister announced that she would like to see specialized environmental courts re-established. Subsequent to that, the Minister of Water and Environmental Affairs met with the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development, and they both agreed that indeed there's a need to re-establish the environmental court. And in February 2010, there was a meeting between the two ministers as well as the Director General for the Department of Water and Environmental Affairs and the Director General for Constitutional Justice and Constitutional Development. In that meeting, it was agreed that there should be a task team which should be responsible for mapping out as to how this environmental court should be established and how many and where should they be established. The task team to date has finalized the memorandum of understanding which needs to be signed by the three director generals. There's a project document that has been completed which maps out as to how the environmental courts are to be established. And there has been a consultation with the judiciary as well as the National Prosecuting Authority about the establishment of the environmental courts. What has been agreed upon in our last meeting, which took place 2 weeks ago, is that the ideal place to establish the environmental courts will be in Mpumalanga, and the proposed date is the 14th of September. There's a meeting on the 31st of August to finalize the preparation and the program for the establishment of the environmental courts.
That's a very short report, but that is really the sense of where we are at the moment.
Chairperson, do you want to go directly into the mining report, or do you want to...
Waiting for the presentation. There is a document that has been forwarded to you about this issue. I'm just going to briefly go through where we are with this long-standing issue. So basically, it's just a briefing on where we are with it and to inform you of recent developments elsewhere in the process that also application for the implementation of regulation related to mining. The original problem statement that led to the agreement between the ministers that was then endorsed by Parliament as part of an amendment to the Roads Act is basically that mineral exploration, prospecting, mining, and reconnaissance historically were excluded from environmental legislation. This resulted in two environmental management systems for the country, one which applied to all economic activities, and a different one applying to mineral development. And it also resulted in regulatory duplication, because when an activity that requires environmental authorization in terms of the National Environmental Management Act occurs within a mining area, it still requires an environmental impact assessment or EIA, regardless of the fact that it's also managed through an environmental management program in terms of the mineral legislation. Mining is a major contributor to pollution and environmental degradation, and yet falls outside the jurisdiction of the custodian of the environment because it's not managed by the environmental authorities, it's managed by the Department of Mineral Resources. Mining is also an important sector of the economy and employer, and stringent and timeless environmental procedures are often viewed as impeding investor confidence with regard to mining. With this background, in 2008, there was an in-principle agreement between the ministers that agreed that there should be only one system, environmental management system for mining, and that this one must be prescribed by the National Environmental Management Act or the environmental legislation. The Minister of Mineral Resources must retain a mandate with the designated competent authority to implement the system, but the Minister of Environmental Authority must be instated as the appeal authority
and it's the authority that legislates or regulates and sets the policy environment for the environment of mining. This transition was supposed to take place through amendments of the Act, the Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act, and the National Environmental Management Act, and the amended system was supposed to come into effect 18 months after the enactment of the Act, which came into effect last. And I'll explain the implications of that a little bit later. This in-principle agreement was then tabled in Parliament in the form of Amendment Act or Amendment Bill of both NEMA and the NPRDA, or National Environmental Management Act, and another Australian Resources Development Act, and a joint portfolio committee sat on the 13th of March 2008 and endorsed the agreement with an addition that the entire function must be transferred not only to regulation and legislation, but also the implementation must be transferred to the Environmental Authority after a period of 3 years. And in the fact, we included the minutes of that joint meeting where that decision was taken. Now, this has then resulted in a number of amendments, and I'm not going to detail it, but it basically transfers the environmental functions that were previously in the Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act into the National Environmental Management Act. The implementation of this agreement was supposed to take place in 3 periods. The first period would be for the status quo, in other words, implementation of the environmental management system as if the Act has not been amended for a period of 18 months. We refer to that as the status quo period of the Act that come into effect law. Now, the circumstances have made that the Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act, which was attended to by the President early in April 2009, but has not yet been brought into effect by the Minister of Mineral Petroleum. So we that period one has not yet started. And originally when we could reach the agreement and present it into Parliament, that period should by now have come to the end already, and it hasn't commenced yet. So that means that the Act continuing to manage the environmental management of mining remains the Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act with the duplication of listed activities. Was a period of 18 months where NEMA would be the act that legislates, regulates, and sets the policy environment for environmental management of mining, but it would be implemented by the Department of Mineral Resources. And then period 3 is the one that was added to the parliamentary process, which transfers the entire function to the National Environmental Management Act. The current status, NEMA was amended. Was enacted in January 2009 and came into effect on 1 May 2009. The NPRDA was enacted or extended to April 2009, but the date of coming into effect is not known, and we have sent several requests to the Minister of Mineral Resources to inform us what her intention is in this regard, and there was a response that basically indicated that there's concerns in the mining sector and that it needs to be addressed before the Act can come into effect. So accordingly, this commencement of the 18-month transitional period is not known. We don't know when that will happen. That is just to summarize the scope of the functions to be transferred. We have to put on environmental authorizations or environmental impact assessments, the development of policy standards around mine's environmental performance, compliance and enforcement, that's environmental compliance and enforcement, management of mining arbitration trust funds, the residue and stockpile management, pollution and waste management related to mining and mine closure, rehabilitation of relics and owners mines, integrated mine closure, asset mine drainage, pumping of excess water, offshore exploration and mining, mining in protected areas, mining in the coastal management zone, and mining and sustainable development strategy. Those are the functions that through this transitional were supposed to be transferred to the Environmental Authority. In order to give effect under the amendment made to the two acts, there was then a service provider appointed to be managed by a joint departmental project management team to develop a mine implementation plan. And this was to do a detailed analysis of the law, to do a capacity and skills requirements analysis, to look at what are the existing systems in place, what is required to make this work, to look at the organizational structures, to look at the systems, to look at cooperative governance requirements, and to build stakeholder capacity and awareness around the change regime. There was an interdepartmental project management team and a multi-stakeholder project steering committee appointed, which reported through the environment MINTEC, that is the DG meeting with the HODs, and the MINNEC, that is the meeting of the Minister EC. That was the project governance. The program to date is we've completed the legal analysis, and that was confirmed by external legal review. The capacity and systems analysis for the environmental authorities were completed, and that is where the entire project being hoped to stand. Because since progress, since August 2009, there has been no progress in this project, and the next steps are dependent on firstly participation by the Department of Mineral Resources so that we can do the capacity and systems analysis in that department, and secondly and most importantly, the coming into the effect of the Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act. So the Mineral Petroleum Development Act is not brought into effect, the entire agreement is actually not possible to be brought into effect. So because this was resulting in quite a lot of financial burden on the department, we have decided to suspend the project and to only recommence with it once there is more certainty about the coming into effect of the MPRDA and the time frames that we are talking about. But I think it's important to note that there are recent events that might result in a reconsideration of the project as originally envisaged, and I'll explain a little bit of that more. These recent developments, firstly and very importantly, the inclusion of the integrated and coordinating regulatory system for mining as one of the required interventions in outcome 10 of the new outcome agenda of government, the 12 outcomes that have been stipulated. So the area of intervention related to mining that is included in the draft service delivery agreement, what is called service delivery agreement, I think, is the issues around asset mine drainage, the rehabilitation of derelict and owner's mines, identification of areas for restricted mineral development, and alignment of the regulatory processes. The due date set in the service in the delivery agreement,
what is delivery agreement?
Delivery agreement for the aligned and integrated regulatory system for it to be implemented, not for it to be developed, is December 2012. Then it must be fully developed, and that's basically taking us through that 18 months of phase one of the regional agreement. Another development that members might have read about in the media was that there's been a meeting between the two ministers in June, on the 21st of June of this year, to discuss two very important issues. The one was related to mining in sensitive areas, most specifically related to the Vele Colliery or the Makwankwe mining issue, and then secondly to again try and resuscitate the relationships and the discussion around alignment of the regulatory system. This has resulted in the ministers appointing an intergovernmental task team to advise them on the issues, both in terms of the issues related to the Vele Colliery and the issues around alignment of the regulatory system. The task team was in the area tasked to review the Agreement and Amendment Act to give advice whether the agreement must be implemented as is and the MPRDA accordingly brought into effect in order for that agreement and the act as amended by Parliament to be implemented. Or that you would remember we talked about period 1 and period 2 and period 3, that period 2 be skipped and that the entire function be transferred to the Department of Environmental Affairs immediately. In other words, revising the agreement to expedite the transfer. Or lastly, that the agreement in a way be nullified and that the status quo should continue while exploring alternative means of alignment and integration. The South team is in the process of finalizing their recommendations, and I think once those recommendations have been finalized, they will be tabled to the ministers for consideration.
Okay. Yep.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, would you want to move on and take the presentation on the implementation of the NEMA Waste Management Act and then open for questions, or do you want to open for questions now?
Can I take the next one?
Yes.
Let's take the next one.
Department is oversighting in the provincial department. When we want an information from the national department, we understand that it must get the information from the provincial government. When will we get that response?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I agree entirely with my colleague, Honourable Kotana. And in fact, in the National Waste Management Strategy, it is, if I remember correctly, specifically stated that the National Department will exercise oversight, will in fact develop guidelines for the provincial health authorities. We're having, I think all of us have interacted with problems where provincial governments do not have the expertise to properly draw up certifications, to properly appoint waste service providers, and I find it personally quite shocking to say to hear we don't get involved with that. It is in your National Waste Management Strategy.
And set up alternatives in the form.
Thank
well,
you,
we
Chair.
Don't know which tenders are essential. I mean, yes. That's tricky.
Yeah.
could I ask Joanne to respond to this issue?
Among the members here. Maybe just wait a bit and hear what their concern
is. Chairperson, thank you very much. My concern is we want an answer which is linked to the present moment. Mm-hmm. She's telling us about the future plans. We don't want the future plans. We want the present moment plans now in this regard. And also we want an answer regarding to the tendering processes.
Wait a bit, Joanne. There is another one.
Yes, to complement what Ntate was saying. Another issue, she says more about the pilot project. We wanted to know what is happening now, not that the pilot, they have learned from that pilot project, but what is happening in the whole country now.
Okay, can you continue? Joanne?
Okay. We do not have a legal mandate to set the tender specifications for either national or for the provincial hospitals. It is something that is done by the Department of Health and by the provincial departments of health across the country. We work with them in order to try and influence the way those tenders are developed, and in order to ensure that the specifications result in systems that meet environmental bottom line. But we do not have a legal mandate to do this, and therefore we have not been directly involved in that process in the hospital. We are working closely with health to try and look at how we could ensure what we want to see is that there is one set of tender specs for all of the medical waste facilities, the way they are in the different hospitals. But that is something that we are engaging with the National Department of Health on, but we do not have a legal mandate or the ability to engage or get involved with anything for the provincial hospital. That is done only through the Department of Health. So I think we would need to then engage with the department, national and provincial departments of health, on the basis of which they set up those tenders.
Perhaps
honourable members, I could just add by saying we held a meeting last week with the Department of Health, the National Department of Health, where we were briefing some of the senior people in the department, the work that is actually happening, collaborative work that is taking place between our department and our officials and officials in the Department of Health. And they were quite happy that the work that we are doing jointly, whether it's policy, risk waste regulation, or healthcare risk waste policy and strategy that we're working on, they were happy that that work would contribute to tender decisions that they can then roll out to provinces. But at the moment, there isn't such a speed. And I think perhaps that then leads precisely to the next issue, which is a relationship, or I think the question is what is the relationship between the department and the Department of Health. Relationship is, I think, maturing. We have a very good relationship at the moment. As I've indicated already, we've been having a series of meetings with the Department of Health because there is a bit of an overlap in the mandate that relates to medical health care in Kuwait. In the National Health Act, the Minister has mandate to, for example, promulgate regulations that relate to health businesses and medical waste. While, as the DDG mentioned earlier, our Minister has the mandate to draw up regulations that would relate to the management of particular or any waste stream. But there's a lot of overlap. Because of that, we tend to work together on quite a few projects. I've already mentioned the healthcare and waste regulations that we work together on. We're working with them on the rollout of the pilots that we referred to earlier, because those need to be taken forward. The pilots have been reviewed. Settings, as a rural setting and an urban setting, where we're looking at a healthcare system and how we manage the health waste. Now, those systems need to be rolled out at a national level, and we can't do that alone at the Department of Environment. We're working with health on that. So the summary is that we're having a very good relationship. The next question, the next issue dealt with the role of health inspectors. What we understand about the role of these inspectors is that they go around the country inspecting a variety of food and drug establishments. They used to, in the past, this is Glasgow Science as well, in recent years they don't do that anymore. But the Department of Health can provide details on the exact role of the inspectors. What we have identified is that the role for health inspectors in the enforcing of environmental legislation, they help us enforce some of the legislation. And at the moment, the Regulation Services team is investigating how we could make sure that by the time the health inspectors finish their curriculum, the school curriculum, that they have some training of the environmental management inspectors course. So that is what we say about the health inspectors. The next issue then dealt with measures to curb municipal dumping, and we interpreted this to mean that the committee wanted to know how we
can hello. There is some end of some newspaper of this document.
The guy sitting next to us. The guy sitting next to us.
And we can't hear properly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can those who are not presenting just stay still? Because there is movement of hands and papers, so they are making such a noise, we can't hear properly.
Yeah.
Okay. Chair, I think the message has got through. restart that.
What I was saying is that the issue that relates to measures to curb municipal dumping, we interpreted that as that the committee would like to know what the department is doing in respect of the unpermitted landfill sites that municipalities own. And what we wanted to bring to the attention of the committee is the fact that we have done a study, the department did a census
in 2007 that revealed that we had in excess of 500 untenanted sites across the country, most of which are owned by municipalities. What we then did in the last year was to contract a service provider to essentially help municipalities to bring in the applications, because these are not applications that were sitting in these offices waiting to be processed. We were talking about unlimited medical sites for which there were no applications in the environment to face the offices. So we got the service provider appointed. They started off phase one, included the small communal sites that are not necessarily the local. That phase one was completed last year, where we processed about 115 of the waste disposal sites. And essentially, what the consultant did was to go to each of the municipalities that had these unlimited small sites and compile the application the municipalities and bring them through to environmental affairs. So that process then happened, and then what was left was the big site, the big landfill site, and those formed part of phase two of the project. Now, the big issue with the big landfill site is that municipalities were not able to bring the application through largely because of financial constraints. That they have, because there's got to be a whole lot of studies, including EIA studies, that must be done in order for these sites to be authorized. It's a big, quite a capital intensive program for municipalities to embark on, and it's very clear that the biggest obstacle was the fact that they didn't have the finances. So, but we also needed to get a sense of how ready they were to bring in the application. So the consultants were then briefed to go into the municipalities, speak to the people in the municipalities, obtain the information regarding how ready they were, and some technical information around the waste disposal site. That happened, and we got about 134 what we call the readiness report, which basically indicate in each of the municipalities that they issued. They indicate what the status of each and every unpermitted landfill site, what it would take to make sure that the problems with the landfill site are fixed, and how much it would cost. So we've got all of those reports, and what we are doing with those reports is that this is the information that we use in engaging with both the National Department of Cooperative Government as well as National Treasury, to engage with them around making more provision, financial provision for waste services or other waste services infrastructure for municipalities. It also helps, the report also helps municipalities in compiling their municipal infrastructure grant applications to COPTA. In fact, the consultants that we have hired had to compile, where it is feasible, the big applications on behalf of the municipalities so that they could get the lead funding from the infrastructure. So that is what we have been doing to fast track the implementation of the unlimited plan. Thank you.
Okay.
Then there was one of the cost cases regulatory services will deal with. The next issue was job creation. The job creation as it relates to waste. In the last quarter, the department runs this waste, working for waste program, which the woman sitting next to me here can give a bit of detail on. There's this little table that's on the screen right now, and I'm going to summarize the figures there. And what those figures mean is that the jobs that we have been able to create, just in the last quarter, we counted approximately 2,600 people that we employed in the last quarter, right? not all those roads are related to waste. So what we've done, we've subtracted everything that's not waste from the 3,200. So that's why I'm giving the total, the approximation, which is the actual figure is 2,531. So that's why I'm saying approximately 2,500. Okay. The next issue that relates to waste is an association of tires. The committee was of the view that there is an association of tires, and the committee wanted to know what progress there was or there is in relation to that association. The response there is that we are aware of this association. However, what we are aware of is a Section 21 company that's been established by the tire industry, which is going to be looking after waste tire protection. So it's an association of users, because we have in the Waste Act attended to the responsibility clauses, as well as the clauses that relate to industry waste management has been drawn up by industry. So that last year the minister asked the tire industry to develop a tire plan, and that was both in terms of the Waste Act, the industry waste management plan, provisions of the Waste Act, as well as the regulations that were published prior to the tire regulations that were published prior to the Waste Act. So that plan, which is going to manage waste tires, was submitted to the department for review and possibly approval. We are in the process of currently assessing that plan to see whether it meets the requirements of a management plan that would look after waste tires. There were three other plans that were submitted by other producers. Those were all given back to the organization that submitted them on account of the fact that they did not yet meet the requirements of the tire regulation, the criteria for submitting the plan. So at the moment, we have the one plan, which is currently with the department for review, and certain that in due course, the department will make a decision on that. Thank you.
Okay. Honourable Chairperson, if I could just ask the Chief Director up here to deal with the issue that you raised around the regulatory, the non-compliance by waste management fund. If you can just report back on that.
Thanks, Chair, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. We were trying to find the presentation on how does the department deal with the non-compliant waste management companies. There are two legal processes that are followed by the department in respect of the illegal activities carried out by the waste management companies. There is an administrative process that is provided for in the Act, and also the criminal procedure process. The two run concurrently. They are not dependent on each other. They run independently. In terms of the administrative process, that is triggered by two processes. Either it's through the routine compliance monitoring on these companies, on the permits that have been issued by the department to check compliance, or through investigation on receipt of the complaints of illegal activities. Upon completion of the compliance monitoring investigation, the complaint will be forwarded to the enforcement unit, which will then issue a compliance notice or a pre-directive which indicate or request the companies to indicate why they should not be given a compliance notice for issues that have been raised in the pre-compliance notice, that is, conditions that have been complied with in the permit, or illegal activities that have been discovered by the inspectors during the inspections or during the information that was given to the department. Once a compliance notice has been issued, the company then is given an opportunity either to appeal to apply for suspension of the compliance notice or directive, or to file an objection to the compliance notice. Once that is done, then the minister will consider that on advice of the department. And if the minister upholds the compliance notice, then the officials will continue to monitor compliance with the company concerned. That's how we deal with the non-compliant companies in as far as the administrative process is concerned. In as far as the criminal investigation is concerned, it's the officials or environmental management inspectors will conduct an investigation. And in terms of the standard operating procedure entered into between the department and South African Police Services, the officials from the department conduct the investigations on their own, and once they are done, they will take the case and load it on the case administrative system of the SAPS, which is South African Police Services, and thereafter it will be handed over to the National Prosecuting Authority for prosecution. And the detailed court status in as far as the cases that are handled by the department, of all the waste management companies, all of them have been, in one way or another, been roped to the criminal court. We have issued summons against all SICAM, Wasteman, AidSafe, Thermopower, Solid Waste Technology. All those are now supposed to appear in court. The detailed document is attached in the documents that we sent to the portfolio committee.
Thank you, Chairperson, for this set of presentations, some questions and
answers. Give members opportunity to ask clarifications and questions. Mr. Sofana?
Chairperson, thank you. I don't have so much questions, but I'm just looking to the statistics of job creation. It only reflects for the first quarter very few areas in different provinces. I just want to know about the statistics of the second quarter and also the clarity about these other provinces. How far have we gone as department in that regard? Thank you.
Maybe to add to that one, some of the provinces don't even appear here. It means the concentration is only on Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and Northwestern Free State to a lesser extent. Can you also clarify as to why in other provinces nothing is happening? Any other member? Ms. Lamo?
Thank you, Chair. I'm having a bit of a problem with all these papers, I must say. Chair, in terms of courts, the environmental courts, from what I understood from the Minister, was that there would be dedicated time in existing courts made available. Is that still the case? Are we looking at a dedicated environmental court? And I'm surprised and rather disappointed to hear that there is going to be one court in Mpumalanga. We understood that there would be a geographical spread of courts. Is this just in the meantime, is this certainly going to spread? I hope so. I'd be interested in your comments on how that's going to cope with the rising number of environmental cases. In terms of the mining, environmental management of mining. I wish the Minister luck with the Minister of Mineral Resources, quite frankly. Her comments recently about Mapungubwe have not, certainly not been shown any concern about the environment whatsoever. My question, however, is about the new EIA regulation.
We just lost the sound there for a moment. Could you just repeat that last question?
My question is about the new EIA regulations. There's quite a substantial amount of detail about mining in the new EIA, the list of activities or listed activities. Is this going to assist you in the meantime until the Minister of Mineral Resources indeed decides that she is not the competent authority? And Chair, I then let me leave it at that. I'm not a bit lost.
You can reply.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps we can start with the statistics question and the distribution of waste projects across the country. The Chief Director for our social responsibility program, you will answer.
Thank you, Chairperson and I would want to point out first that the
before that you are
I got asked to introduce me. My name is Benom Zikoja. I am the Chief Director for the Southern Responsibility Program. The first issue I want to talk to is, yes, indeed, the report that you have is for the third quarter and the first, because we are still halfway through the second quarter. So we would only have the report for the second quarter at the end of the quarter, but we do have projects that are running in other areas, including in this quarter. The second part relates to waste projects. I want to indicate that we don't only run with waste projects, we do have a lot of other projects that may be running with other projects in the world, they may not necessarily be waste, but also that some waste projects might still be running in this quarter and only to report in the next quarter. For instance, I can confirm that Northern Cape, which does not appear there, but we do have a project in Kasukanyane specifically, which will be affecting part of the next quarter. Equally, if you go to Mpumalanga, we do have a project in Bushbang Ridge, which will report. And so we do have all of those, but the report is being taken into consideration only in the first quarter.
Okay.
Then, Chairperson, on the environmental court issue, Chief Director Bakena.
Thanks, Chair. The honourable member is correct by saying that it's dedicated time, not dedicated court. Well, that's still the understanding that there will be dedicated time given to environmental crimes in the current existing court. And as far as the launch in Mpumalanga does not mean that it's only one court that is going to be launched, but that's the area where it has been identified that the ministers will launch this particular court or the dedicated time in the current legislative court. We initially had four pilot projects that needs to be rolled out. So the Mpumalanga area where it's going to be launched will also give an indication as to how the other areas are going to be phased in terms of the rollout.
Unfortunately not. The EIA regulations, the list of activities related to mining was included on the strength of the National Environmental Management Act, and the provisions in the National Environmental Management Act that only comes into effect if the NPRPA comes into effect. So it's very much linked to sections 14 and 12 of the National Environmental Management Amendment Act, Act 62 of 2000. So unfortunately, those listed activities and also specified in the coming into effect notice is not in effect yet because it's reliant on the NPRDA coming into effect. However, any activity that takes place in a mining area that is listed as EIA activity, so the roads, the storage of the data, the storage and handling of dangerous goods, still require an environmental authorization from the environmental authority, regardless of it being in a mining area.
Thank you.
Will be quite aggressive, in fact, because you know to ensure that certainly environment sustainability is taken seriously in terms of the spatial development. The Director General did indicate to us that a presentation had been made to the National Planning Commission in respect of spatial planning, and the fact that this department has tools such as environmental management framework legislation that can be utilized very effectively. The question is really, who would initiate the use of those tools to look at, just as an example, I'm not saying specifically, but just as an example, areas that are too sensitive to mine. If you want to, or if you want to look at Limpopo, for instance, which is, in our view, let me say personal view, being over mined, who would initiate an environmental management framework sort of investigation? Would it be the National Planning Commission? Would it be done through that body? Thank you, Chair.
Any other question? Okay. In the absence of...
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I will request an additional call to the Chief Director responsible for impact management to respond.
Chair, I don't want to give too much detail in the interest of time, but what our presentation to the Planning Commission was doing was to look at how the spatial planning instruments that we have provisions for in the National Environmental Management Act can be integrated into what is envisaged the spatial development, spatial planning and land use management act that will be developed. So in other words, to say that if all the spatial development frameworks of every local municipality is environmentally informed, and if the land use management decisions of all sectors are bound by that spatial planning, then we should have a more sustainable land use form or land use pattern. But that is a process of legislation that still must be developed. And I think in the meantime, we will continue to implement and to develop environmental management framework for areas that are both environmentally sensitive or under development pressure, whether it be mining or any other development pressure. For the Limpopo province specifically, I can just report that we are very far progressed with environmental management framework for the Waterberg District Municipality, which is one of the big coal resource areas around Lekalale. And we have also, in collaboration with the biodiversity component, is in the process of commissioning an environmental management framework for the district municipality, Bembe, etc., where the Bakambukwe area is in.
Great.
We have also, and it is a parliamentary question that you should get a response of very shortly, provided a list of all the environmental management frameworks that are currently being developed, where they are located, and what their status is. We can certainly forward that to the committee as well. Some of these have been initiated by MECs, provincial MECs, and others have been initiated by the minister. Ultimately, the minister needs to act concurrently. We also envisage that this would be a very important tool in identifying, in terms of the outcome 10 delivery agreement, areas where we should propose restricted areas for mineral development.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, I think maybe... you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to propose, Chairperson, that we have a few minutes, and the last issue on the agenda is a very short issue to be dealt with by the DDG of Corporate Services, or Corporate Affairs, around the transfer of staff to the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry. A short progress report on that, if the committee would like.
I was in fact coming to that.
Yeah.
I can continue.
Okay, could I ask the DDG to present the report?
Yes,
good afternoon, Honourable Chairperson, members. My report is going to be very short. There was a request from the committee regarding the progress on the staff transfer. We finished the transfer of staff general guidelines that were laid down by the DPSA. But notwithstanding that, we've actually managed to complete the process. We've also finalized issues related to the transfer of people in relation to, for example, OSD and the implementation of the occupation-specific legislation, as well as issues around performance bonuses and so forth. Also, just as a matter of interest, the DPSA has now approved the structure in relation to the Ocean and Coast Branch. And basically, from our point of view, no outstanding HR issues relating to the split between the departments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any comments?
What is OSD?
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by commending the presentation made by the department. We thank you very much for implementing this split process and without problems, as you are saying that you are finished without outstanding problems. So what I want to know is that in your organogram, do you still have some open vacancies in your organogram, and how is your organogram looks like, maybe just in brief? Thank you very much.
Okay, Chair, obviously with the split process, you must remember that we've had two splits with the department. In May last year, we had the initial split between environment and tourism. Subsequently, in November last year, we had the split between fisheries and environment. There's obviously people that were moved to either of those two departments, and there are gaps. We subsequently submitted a new organization structure to the GPSA, where we indicated the folks that we require to carry out the functions of the department. That process we are hoping to do over the MCF process to prioritize. We prioritize the posts that we actually need to carry out our functions in the short term. The rest of them we'll try and implement over the MPEF. But I must add that funding is a constant challenge for us. And I'm sure that the members are aware that in relation to our budget, that's one of the constraints that the department is continuously experiencing.
Yeah. Quickly on the establishment of South African Tire Cycling Association. In person before the committee, so it's
but
very
it's
good,
rich,
and it's time saving, and it also saves the resources. So thank you very much. Legamos.
Yes. Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. It's been a really useful demonstration of how technology can reduce on the environment.
Yeah.
Thank you, Honourable.
And we are hosting, we need to know how they are doing. Even about the House of Parliament, we said we must win by when.
Tomorrow, for what happens, man said the same
room. Also doing it like this.
Really?
Yes. I'm exhausted. That was actually very good, Tileka.
You are bad. You can see that. Tileka is bad. Yeah? It is. Sometimes
you
can't even
stand
and
you can't stand. We shall fly all the way to get shouted at every
time.
At least tomorrow that can happen while they're in the...
Yeah, they pull far away from us. Yeah.
No.
Right.
Vagra, we'll film this. We don't have a fun group today. Tomorrow.
Yeah, and we
don't.
If I'm not given, I can't try.
Thank you, Chair. So, Minister, I'll let you see how I want to see the picture.